Bert just got on. Okay, I think time is at 2:03. Let's go ahead and do a roll call, Almeida.
Okay. Justice Perry-Gary?
Here.
Senior Justice Hardesty?
Present.
Judge Bateman?
I'm here.
Ms. Beggs?
Here.
Judge Brown?
Here.
Judge Denton?
Here.
Judge Draculich? Judge Glasson? Judge Graham?
Here.
Judge Hardy? Judge Higgins?
Yeah, no, Hardy's here.
Oh,
finally unmuted.
He was muted.
Okay. And you.
Higgins is here too.
Thank you, Judge Higgins. Mr. Kennedy?
Yeah, she ordered.
Why. Judge Riggs?
Here.
Judge Ritchie?
Present.
Judge Stockard?
Here.
And Judge Zimmerman?
Present.
Excellent. We do have a quorum today. And if there's anybody else that I did not call, could you please identify yourself?
Keith Fisher with the National Judicial College.
Thank you.
Any other guest members of the public, please identify. I got a few call-ins that I'd like to have identified. Am I muted?
No, I can still hear you.
Okay, let's see. I see several numbers here. I see Paul Dyla is there, but we can't hear him.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, and then Gary, are you there? Or is it just
this is Gary Voss, that I was on mute.
Okay, very good. And okay. Back button. Okay, I think we've got everybody identified. All right, welcome. I hopefully we're going to be in a position to generate a report. It looks like Judge Higgins put together a synopsis, and I think we've got a couple of items to take action on. Judge Riggs, you had supplied material to us on, I believe, four proposals that you had proposed, and we hadn't taken action on those before, so we will do that today. So before we get into our meeting, is there any public comment? Is there any members of the public present that would like to make a comment? Okay, hearing none, we're going to move on. Let's, I'm going to ask that we move to approve the minutes of the last meeting, November 1st. You've all been supplied copies of the minutes. Do you have any additions, deletions, corrections? Any discussion? And Alameda, I noted one simple little typo on page 7, misspelling John McCormick's name under legislative session part 5 on page 7. That's the only thing that I noticed. So is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. All in favor? Aye.
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 They're approved. Okay. Next order of business. This is under item 4, items for discussion, possible action. And this, Judge Riggs, you've been added. Your items are separately on under number 6. But if you'll turn to the materials that were circulated. Are you all, do you all have those materials available?
Yes.
Okay, and Kevin, I'm gonna turn this part over to you and let you explain how you put this together.
Well, I took the proposals we've been discussing. I set them out on separate pages. So if some could be agreed to and some not, we could just go ahead and do those votes and agreement separately and not get bogged down in one document we all couldn't come to an agreement on. So I broke down what I thought were the general agreements and the recommendations. And as it says at the top of page 10 there, these would be recommendations from the commission to the Judicial Discipline Commission. We don't have any authority to require them to do anything. We've kind of discussed that in some detail in prior meetings, but these would be recommendations for changes to be made to the rules and procedures at the commission. And it would be up to the Judicial Discipline Commission then, I assume, to just make a decision on whether to adopt them. I don't know what they're, some time ago, I understand they were starting to make a rulemaking process to change the rules. I don't know what the status of that is. So the first one is just kind of a general policy statement on page 10 there that the commission adopt procedures so that they adopt a bifurcated discipline process, which is noted on the bottom there, is followed in similar, and not completely the same, but in similar fashions in 32 other states, that there's a separate panel that considers the probable cause and whether to issue charges, so to speak, and that the panel that would sit on a discipline hearing is a separate panel making separate decisions and not influencing one another. And you could liken it to the probable cause phase at a preliminary hearing and a trial, the proof, well, it's not that, it's not the proof in this, but a different standard of proof in the hearing process. So that the panel that's directing the investigation and seeing the investigators and decides whether or not to go forward would be separate than the trial panel, which would start fresh for the hearing. So that's a general policy recommendation that's being made that we should adopt, work on those procedures. During our discussions with Mr. Dyla, when we were able to meet with Mr. Dyla once, I indicated that if we were able to come to a recommendation on this that the commission accepted, that I'm sure I would volunteer to come testify on a budget matter if that was necessary. And the other judges, I believe, that were involved in that discussion that day did the same, because I'm sure that's an issue. So that's the basis of this general policy recommendation.
Okay, good. And you know, I think structuring this discussion, what I'd like to do is take each of these recommendations one by one, discuss them, and then vote as to whether or not that is the consensus to set forth the recommendation. Does that sound fair?
Justice Bailey-Gary?
Yes, Mark.
Yes, I just had a question that occurred to me. These are votes to make recommendations to the commission.
Correct.
The question I have is whether or not the commission members should be voting on these recommendations at this time or await recommendations that are made to the commission.
I think as part of the commission, Mark, and get Justice Hardesty's thoughts on it as well, but I think you're more than entitled to vote as a member of the commission.
Yeah, and Chief, I agree with the approach you're taking. I didn't want to add one thing, though. The materials and the discussions that we've had in previous meetings have identified that some of these recommendations aren't necessarily recommendations exclusively to the commission. Maybe they need to be made to others as well, for example, to the legislature or considering constitutional amendments. And I think this first one highlights that point, because I, as I understood it, and I stand corrected by Paul and Kevin, this one here, one of the division points is that this issue is not constitutionally permissible, at least from Paul and maybe even the commission's point of view. I'm not sure whether it's both, but in any event, I recall that being discussed in the materials provided by Paul. So some of these here, maybe we should include that the recommendations are to the commission, Nevada Judicial Code of Conduct, and maybe to the legislature. Some of this was done, I believe, when in Judge Riggs' letter of recommendations, where she urged that, I think it was item four particularly, was addressed specifically to the, all the appointing agencies which were named. So, Devin, I don't know how you feel about that, but it would seem like whoever has jurisdiction over a recommendation, at least, and I know that your position is somewhat different. You feel the commission could proceed with this without having to deal with the Constitution, but it seems like we shouldn't limit these. It should be to any party to whom the recommendation has jurisdiction if there's a consensus on the commission to reach that point.
So, Jim, would it be it would be clearer if we make that, we indicate that in this first paragraph and before we make the recommendations, rather than going through each rule and targeting it toward the legislature for a constitutional amendment, or put that in the first part of the introductory statement, that it's not limited to just the, you know, we're making the recommendations to the Commission on Judicial Discipline as well as to the legislature for potential constitutional amendments.
Yeah, because, I mean, for example, I think items 2, 3, 4, all of the rest of them relate to proposed rule changes. So it looks to me like all of 2 through 7 are all appropriate recommendations directed specifically to the commission. They would be the only ones that could effectuate those rule changes. I'd welcome comment from Mr. Dyla and Judge Higgins on that observation. But one seems to be a recommendation that if the commission makes it and the commission doesn't feel that it has the constitutional capacity to make that change itself, then it ought to be made also perhaps to the legislature or to the...
Can I ask a question about that?
Or to the citizens of Nevada.
Yeah. Keith?
Yeah. I've been in bar for 40 plus years, but let me preface this by saying I'm not a member of the Nevada bar. So this ignorant of something that will make this a foolish question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because I went and I looked at this and the statutes governing the commission specifically now in 1.4655, which is commencement of an inquiry, is misconduct. And it says that the commission shall do X, shall do Y, and the term commission is defined to mean the entire commission. So to me, that maybe this bifurcation, I'm not taking a position on whether bifurcation is a good idea, or agree that other states do it, but I'm wondering whether it would require an amendment to the statute.
At least. I would invite Paul's comment, but I thought I remembered one of the comments being that this bifurcation process was, in his point of view, and maybe the commission's as well already, that it's precluded by the language in the Nevada Constitution. Paul, do I have that right?
Yes. The Constitution speaks to this issue. The statute also speaks to this issue, but as you know, the Constitution would need to be changed, not just the statute.
Yeah. So, Chief, back to the point, I just would urge that at least one, it looks like all the others, I could be mistaken, Judge Higgins, but it looks like all the others are directed at recommended changes for to the rules asking the commission to consider those recommended changes.
That's right.
But this one here looks like it is really one that probably needs to be made to the legislature and maybe even to the, well, to the legislature, I guess, as much as anything.
How would you structure that language then, Jim? Do you have a suggestion?
Well, what I probably would do is, the opening paragraph says, hereby makes the following recommendations, colon, and then number one, I would say, to the Nevada legislature to ensure due process and fundamental fairness is afforded to all Nevada judges, legislature take necessary steps and adopt amendments to bifurcate the commission's proceedings so that one panel, et cetera.
Okay, good.
I don't know if Omita picked up on that, but that would be my suggested change before we vote on it. At least that would be seem to me to be more complete, because I would suspect the commission would say, well, we've already told you we can't do that. At least in our view, we can't. So we should make the recommendation to the people who can.
Okay, and I absolutely agree with that. Is there any discussion on this? Further discussion? Anybody have anything to offer?
Well, I certainly agree with Judge Hardesty's suggestion. I guess I will be the outlier and say that while I have been convinced that the Constitution prohibits us from telling the Commission what to do, I'm not convinced the Constitution prohibits the Commission from voluntarily bifurcating, but maybe that's a question for another day. I make a recommendation to both to cover our bases.
Yeah, we could do that. On that one, we just direct it to both. Any other discussion on it? All right, let's vote it up. Mark, did you have something?
No.
I thought I heard you.
Justice Perigary, it's David Hardy. I don't want to belabor the point. I'm going to vote in opposition, but not because I oppose due process and fundamental fairness. And I certainly understand that I might be a minority voice, but I'm not persuaded yet the bifurcation is the right direction to go. And I just want that known, so it's not a solo opposed vote without explanation.
Okay, good. Thank you.
This is Tom Stockard. I would ask the commission to consider Justice Hardesty's change, but then on where it says to ensure due process and fundamental fairness, before that, instead of taking a position, encourage the legislature by inserting the words to consider whether to ensure due process and fundamental fairness to all Nevada judges, whether bifurcation is necessary, so that there could be a debate in front of the legislature of both the pros and the cons, maybe bring in experts like Keith Fisher, Cynthia Gray, and speak to the advantages, the disadvantages, and also the costs. And then they could make that decision on one, whether it would just be a statutory change, because I think at the very minimum it would require that based on the language Keith pointed out, or whether they would need to be a constitutional amendment. And I think if they then buy in, they would also have to buy into funding it, because there is a substantial cost.
Okay. Well,
at the risk of repeating myself, I think our commission is supposed to make a recommendation. And the recommendation tells us what we think. Maybe we don't think that, but I don't want to. I would hope not to boot it down the road and just say, "Would you guys please think about this too?" But I understand if the majority doesn't agree with me on that. I think we should ask for it, and I understand there are costs, and I volunteered to go testify on their budget. But I think it's something we need to consider.
Anybody else? No further comment? Okay. Let's get a motion and then the language. I kind of like the pure language, Tom, rather than pulling back from what we're recommending. These will all go through hearings, and all of this will be fleshed out in the process if they consider it at all. That all becomes relevant at that time. So I'd prefer to leave it just directing the legislature to consider. We're making these recommendations to the legislature and then leaving the language the same. I guess that's not a very clear motion. So the motion would be hereby makes the following recommendations, colon, to the Nevada legislature to ensure due process and fundamental fairness, and then keep the language as it is. So that's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
No.
Mark Denton, okay, hold on. Identify yourselves as you vote no.
Mark Denton. Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
Tom Stockard, no.
Okay.
Hardy, no.
Okay, any other no's? Okay. So it appears the motion passes. Let's move on. Page 11, Rule 2.8. Replace the phrase prosecuting officer with special counsel. Kevin, did you have anything else to add there?
I don't think there's any dissent on this. It just was to comport the rule with what is in NRS 14295. So it just makes a
okay, and so
technical correction.
All right, and then Jim, we would have to preface all of these with now to the Commission on Judicial Discipline, correct?
Yes, Chief. And I think maybe all of the remaining ones relate to rule changes of the commission. So I think all of the rest of these would be recommendations to the commission.
Okay. Okay. So does anyone have any discussion on this particular rule and this recommendation? Okay. No discussion. Then is there a motion to make this recommendation?
Chief, move to approve.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, it passes. Moving on to page 12, it's rule 6. And Kevin?
We're recommending that the rule be changed so that the statement of the charges and other documents should be posted on the website within 48 hours of filing, including pleadings filed with the Supreme Court and decisions of the Supreme Court. I think the feeling from some of our colleagues is that some stuff gets immediately posted, but not everything does. And it's only fair that we get the whole story up there so that it's posted on the website. I know Mr. Dyla indicated that there are limitations on the state webmaster and getting the state to do things, but again, a recommendation, and I will twist Judge Riggs' arm to go with me to the legislature and say they need more funding to pay for their own website if that's what we need to do. But
I would testify at the legislature, Judge Higgins, to support funding for a website that can be inclusive enough to be informative to the judges and the public.
Okay, what about discussion on this item?
I believe also what their rules require, their own rules require them to post everything on the website.
Okay, is there any other discussion? Okay, is there a motion?
I move to approve that recommendation.
Second?
I'll second it. Okay, go ahead.
Is that Judge Riggs seconded? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, it passes. Page 13, Rule 12.2. Kevin?
This proposed revision would give somebody subject to the preliminary stages of a disciplinary proceeding that they would have the knowledge of before the interview of what they're answering questions to. So, I mean, we had the case on the interrogatories that were requested, and the Supreme Court's changes says that can't happen. But I think it's, if we're going to have an investigator sit down with a judge and ask them questions, it's just fair that the judge knows what the questions are being asked about. So, I think, you know, and I can't speak for everybody, and I'm not close friends with some of the judges that are been subject to this, but I think there's some feelings that sometimes the investigators show up to talk about issue A, and then they end up going down some side road and talking about issue C and D, where that was not the original intent of the investigation. So this would just advise the person being investigated before they meet with the investigator what the charges are and what a draft complaint looks like, what they're looking to charge the judge with.
Okay. Discussion? Anybody have any thoughts?
I think it's important when somebody shows up and wants to ask you questions about somebody who's lodged a complaint against you, that you know the context of the questions, instead of trying to answer questions blindly and you have no idea what they're talking about.
This is Mark Denton. If I could ask Mr. Dyla, would you mind speaking to this issue?
Sure. We currently provide a copy of the complaint prior to the judge responding to the complaint. There is no precedent of giving anywhere, but to give a complaint prior to an investigative interview. So as I discussed at length in my memorandum, the commission in a writ proceeding for the Supreme Court, and it's been attached to the meeting materials, past meetings, in our writ answer, there were a number of reasons why a complaint should not be given during an investigative interview. And as I said, once the judge is asked to respond, this is after the investigation, then the judge gets the complaint, gets the investigative report, all of the investigative materials, audios, et cetera, but not before the investigative interview. And, you know, we're not the only organization that does that throughout the country. So those are my 2 points.
Okay. Any other discussion? Anybody else have any points to make?
That's a great answer would always be, I don't know what you're talking about, or I don't remember.
In the August meeting, one of the previous meetings, attached as an exhibit was our answer to a writ on this actual issue, and it gave the commission's responses and reasoning. Which was gathered throughout the country, other judicial discipline commissions throughout the state, as to why a complaint is not given prior to an investigative interview. Those were part of the meeting materials a couple of months ago.
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
If this were to pass and essentially we're giving the judge notice, this one then... Are we saying this would prohibit the person conducting the investigation to ask questions or discuss topics outside of what this notice provides? If that question makes sense?
It does. I don't see this as limiting that.
I'm just saying, if it's not going to limit it, I don't necessarily see the harm in it. But aside from, of course, what the gentleman presented on gathered the info, but there also doesn't seem to be. I mean, I guess it's just a courtesy heads up, but if it doesn't prohibit them from asking questions outside of what was noticed, I don't necessarily see a significant issue.
So Justice Perigary, it's Hardy. I intend to oppose this vote, but I want to express how positive I think this experience has been, because as the discussions unfold and as we interact with Paul and other commissioners, we sense where improvements can be made. And certainly as investigators go out to speak to judges, I think that there's a lot of lessons that have been presented during this commission work. But I just oppose the language that makes it mandatory in all instances. And so while there is improvement, I intend to oppose. And I don't need to debate or anybody to respond, but I'm just explaining my vote.
Okay, thank you. Judge Riggs.
I have a question for Mr. Dyla. And I'm sorry, Mr. Dyla, did you say that this particular issue is subject of a writ or of litigation?
Yes, it was in the Tobiasen case. An answer to a writ was filed. The Supreme Court, as I mentioned previously, they didn't decide the issue. They decided the issue. It was moot. It was a moot issue. They didn't get to the merits of the decision. But in a couple of meetings past, I had submitted an answer to the writ in response to this specific issue, which gave the reasons why. The commission's reasons why a complaint should not be given prior to an investigative interview, and gave examples, many examples in that answer to assist the commission, this commission, in deciding this issue.
Thank you.
I mean, if we're hung up on the phrase complaint, I'm certainly, at least I'm speaking for myself, wouldn't be opposed to saying something like, provide the basis of the pending investigation or the allegations that have been made and the basis of them and the corresponding documents. I mean, it's tough if an investigator says, well, did you throw your clerk in jail on December 3rd? Well, that's one thing. Have you ever, tell me every time you violated this section of the canons. I mean, so it's hard to answer a question if you don't know what they're asking you about. And so I personally, I'm not hung up on the complaint itself, but as before you talk to an investigator who is recording what you say to present to the commission your statement, it'd be nice to know before you have to answer the questions what it's about. And maybe you could make a decision about whether, I better hire counsel, or I wasn't at court on January 1st. It wasn't me that threw anybody in jail. So, I mean, it makes a lot of differences to people. And I'm not hung up on complaint. Maybe we can amend that to say the basis of the complaint or specifics about the pending investigation, or at least somehow to give people notice ahead of time.
In all instances, Judge Higgins, when the investigator calls the judge to arrange an interview, the investigator will summarize, what will inform the judge of the case that they're involved in, that what's going to be discussed, summarize the issue. So the judge is aware weeks before the meeting as to which videos we're looking at, what case numbers, and the basis of the investigation. And that occurs in all instances. The commission doesn't want to have judges caught off guard. They have to prepare for the interview. Some do and some don't, but they are given the case number, videos to look at, et cetera.
Well, then perhaps doing that in writing fixes that, but I don't know.
Then Ken, what about including in a rule that before a judge can be penalized for not cooperating with an investigation, they must be informed by the investigator A, B, C, D, those items that Mr. Dyla just mentioned.
Is that directed to me, Judge Rick?
No, I'm just saying that I'm wondering, you know, to throw it out there for discussion. My understanding is that, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that if you do not cooperate with an investigator of the Nevada Commission on Judicial Discipline, you can be penalized or sanctioned. Can we include a rule that before such sanction can be imposed, a judge must be informed about the, not exactly the specifics, but at least an outline of what they're being investigated for?
Well, Judge Higgins just indicated, why wouldn't this be resolved by requiring the commission to provide in writing a basis of the complaint rather than the, does that make sense? Because apparently they do that prior to the interview, when they call to set up an interview. Is that correct, Paul?
Yes, the investigator calls. Nobody from my office called, but the investigator calls, yes, and gives the judge a summary of what the issues are, what they're going to be discussing, case numbers, videos, et cetera, yes.
And so is there any problem with putting that in writing, alerting the judge prior to the investigator calling to schedule the interview?
Well, I guess they could put it the same information in writing if that would be useful.
Yeah.
But it would be the same information that they're telling them verbally, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, then there's no debate then about whether they were advised or not. It's in writing. Yeah. I can't say the investigator didn't tell me about that judicial conference in PO, which I didn't know about that, but it's there in writing. There's no question about what they were prepared to answer.
Well, the only issue with that is it's you know, whether it's verbal or otherwise, it's very limiting. You know, the investigator by law can discuss issues that are in the complaint that was uncovered during an investigation. So, you know, the commission doesn't want this to limit the scope of the investigation. If the investigator believes that certain answers to questions have led to other issues, or their independent investigation has led to other potential violations of the code, that they're not limited in asking the judge questions in that regard. And the law is very clear that is allowed.
Wouldn't the investigator have to go back to the commission to seek permission to investigate this new purported violation?
The investigator will include that in the investigation report. You know, when they're sitting down having an interview, they're going to ask the questions that they believe are relevant to the issues or any other issues that came about through their investigation. If they file an investigation report, they include all the investigative materials to the commission, and the commission decides if there is another issue that needs follow-up investigation on, the commission itself will vote to do that. In other words, the investigator doesn't go down, just go off on a tangent, and the commission must follow. If the investigator believes it's important, it'll be in the investigative report. If it's uncovered additional potential code violations, then the commission will decide, not the investigator, what should be done at that point. And this has actually come up during Supreme Court cases as well, this very issue of, well, you know, if the investigator believes that the judge did wrong, what did not is immaterial to the commission's decision. They have a conclusion. They're not attorneys or lawyers. They submit their investigation report on allegations with the facts that they've uncovered during the investigation, and the commission decides, is there enough of evidence in that regard to move forward or not?
So it seems like it would be a good idea to put in writing to the judge that initially we want to talk to you about this case and you threw somebody in jail and whatever. I don't see what the harm would be in putting in writing what the initial reason for the visit is. Even if you cover something new.
Oh, I'm sorry. as long as it's not going to limit the scope of the investigation where a judge will say, I'm not answering that question, I'm not cooperating because it's beyond the scope of the complaint or what you told me in writing, that's our concern.
Well, what if you, and I understand that concern, but if you indicated as commission will provide in writing the initial basis of the complaint, that leaves it rather open.
Yes, it does.
How's that? Okay, anybody else have any comment on this? If you like that language we just talked about, Keith?
I would just point out that a number of other jurisdictions require that before the commission can commence an investigation or an inquiry based on a complaint, that they have to notify the judge. Now, they don't have to provide a copy of the complaint or any actual documents, but they do, in some jurisdictions, that all that's required is to tell the judge that a complaint has been filed, not necessarily by whom, and to just apprise the judge of the subject matter of the complaint or the subject matter that's being investigated. And that, I think that probably would satisfy the process. I'm a little unclear from this discussion exactly how much of a license an investigator might have to look into things that are not alleged in the complaint, but maybe that's just, you know, my own personal confusion. I do know that, you know, looking at the Nevada statute, that there are some limitations. For example, you can't go back for conduct that occurred more than 3 years ago. So there must be some restrictions on what the investigator can pursue. But beyond that, I don't know what they would ask.
The investigator must, operate within the confines of the complaint and any direction that's given to the investigator by the commission. They can't just go on a wild goose chase, whatever they want. It's once an investigation is authorized by the commission sends a letter to the investigator and explains that the commission voted to investigate in this matter. And this is the issue. And the issues that the commission, the investigator should ask of the judge and whatnot. So they can't just do whatever they want. They have to stick to the complaint and any other related issues that come out of an investigation.
That makes sense. Okay, thank you.
Realistically then, you are somewhat constrained by the complaint itself.
Initially, yes.
Yeah. And so if you talk about the initial basis of the complaint, that leaves it pretty open and it still informs as to what's contained in that complaint, the initial basis, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Can I put Ms. Beggs on the line and just ask her to chime in?
Yeah.
If you're sitting there with your client and the investigation's about A, B, and C, and you're, you know, fully cooperating, and then the investigator says, well, as long as we're here, let's talk about X, Y, and Z. I think it would be a fair response to say, well, if the commission wants to give us notice that that's part of the investigation, we're happy to reschedule that discussion for another day, but we're here today to talk about A, B, and C. I mean, maybe I'm making that up in my head, but.
No, I would agree with that. And I was actually just, you know, looking back to the briefing in regard to the investigative issue in this. And, you know, my feeling is since while the investigator does provide an investigative report to the commission for a decision to determine if there is a significant amount, substantial evidence for the judge to respond in writing at that point in time to the complaint, I do think then if part of the investigator's report is based on the interview with the judge and the information obtained in that interview, and that is part of the information that the commission is utilizing to determine if the complaint is going to go forward, then I think, yes, the judge should have at least proper notice about what the interview is going to be about. So I think in the general terms that I've heard today, I I think if I was representing a member of the judiciary and we had notice that there was going to be an investigation and we had notice of the basis of the original complaint and we knew what we were going to be talking about, that's absolutely fine. If we take a, you know, if we're veering off into unknown territory that is not reasonably related to the underlying basis of the original complaint, I would cease the interview at that point in time. But to Judge Riggs's point, judges and judicial officers, court personnel, et cetera, are required by law to comply with those investigations, and failure to comply with that investigation can lead to further disciplinary action. So I would not want to put my client in a position where they're being asked questions that we have on topics outside the general scope of what we've been noticed about, and then be told that they may be facing disciplinary consequences if they don't cooperate. At that point in time, I have no problem, like I say, ending the interview and resetting for another day when we are properly noticed on those additional issues. That's absolutely fine. I think that's well within the purview of the commission and their investigator. But I think kind of jumping into a whole new area during the initial interview, quite frankly, in any circumstance, would be inappropriate, in my opinion.
Chief, if I could weigh in.
Sure.
What Ms. Riggs has just commented about leads me to the conclusion that where there are questions that vary from the subject matter of the investigation is really a case-by-case issue. Making a rule to address that, I think, is impossible. So I would like to suggest some different language than what's contained here. And the language that I would suggest is that paragraph 2 begin with the sentence that says, if the commission determines that its investigators should schedule an interview before requiring an answer, the investigator shall provide in writing a description of the subject matter of the matter of the issue being investigated. Then if the judge or their lawyer has a concern that the investigation is going outside the bounds, that's almost in the nature of a discovery dispute, I think. And I think they can always take that up with the commission later on. But I don't think that it is reasonable to try to answer those kinds of issues on a case by case, which are likely going to be case by case problems. I also have reservations about restricting investigators' ability because, quite frankly, investigators are expected to obtain information through their investigative skills. And judges, not all judges, are going to be forthright in their responses. And so I think that it's fair for us to expect that a reasonable investigation can be made so that the commission has facts in front of it to work with. this is an exaggeration, of course, but I can only imagine being required to share with former President Trump all of the imagined documents that were taken from his Mar-a-Lago facility before conducting an interview with him. Now, obviously, we're implicating different things. There is his right to remain silent. Here, to a degree, the judge's ability to insulate themselves from other liability has been foreclosed by their duty to be forthright and responsive to questions and cooperate with issues that are being raised. But I think if they have in writing a description of the subject matter of the allegations before the interview, that provides the commission with a basis then to decide whether or not something's gone awry with the investigation itself.